Hello and welcome to episode number 6 of Splash Pad, a TCU on SI podcast focusing on the TCU women's basketball team. I'm your host, Tori Couch, and I'm joined by the voice of Killer Frogs, JD Andrus. We are recording on Sunday, January 5th. The Horned Frogs resumed conference play last week and are now 15-1 overall for the first time in program history, including 3-0 in Big 12 play. And are ranked number 11. JD, how are you doing today?
Or there's a snow apocalypse coming to Texas, so other than that, really, really good week of women's basketball, and dare I say, maybe even men's basketball, which I'm sure Nick and Davis will be talking about on their podcast. But yeah, really good week of women's basketball to watch, and I'm sure we're gonna get into it. But it was really, really nice to see them challenged on the offensive side of the court. So that was really good to see.
Yeah, fully agree. And yeah, yesterday on Saturday, the men beat Kansas State on a last second shot. The women got a win over Cincinnati. So yeah, good day for TCU basketball overall yesterday. And on the women's side, they had one non-conference, so their final non-conference game this past week, and two conference games. That non-conference game was a 79-47 win over Brown. They held Brown under 30% shooting. Haley Van Lith, Madison Connor, and Taylor Bigby had double-digit scoring. Agnes Emenanopoulou had 14 rebounds, and TCU shot 40% from three. Just kind of what you'd come to expect in a lot of these non-conference games, so nothing too crazy to really evaluate there. So then the next game was a 63-50 win over Colorado. TCU shot 40% from the field, 31% from three. Colorado shot 35% overall and 28% from three. So TCU did a nice job guarding three, forces some tough looks there. But TCU did not control this game by any stretch until late. Colorado had a 12-11 lead after the first quarter. TCU managed to get a 14-point lead in the third quarter, but then they were held scoreless for the first 4 minutes of the fourth quarter to cut the lead down to five. And then TCU was able to kind of pull away a little bit to get that comfortable win. I like that they had a game where it wasn't just hit the cruise button in the third quarter and off you go. They needed a game like this in conference play to kind of just maybe a sense reset their focus.
Yeah, and there's a trend that you're starting to see that you saw against UCF, you saw against Colorado, and you saw slightly against Cincinnati. Colorado was kind of also an outlier just because of the foulouts, but you're starting to see teams shrink their entire minutes that they're distributing between their players when they play TCU. It kind of reminds you of like teams playing Baylor in the, middle 2010s, late 2010s. They're going to shrink their starting five, and they're probably going to play maybe a six rotation. Like, you're going to get every team's best shot, especially when you're as hyped as you are, you have as much talent as you do, you have a player like HVL and like Sedona. Like, you're going to get every single team's best shot. And Colorado was the first to really show that. Like, their players were playing up, like, we knew they were a physical defensive team, but they were even playing a level above what you expected from them. Just basically grinding their teeth and saying, you know what, if I foul out, I foul out, which some of them did. Like, you're just gonna, all these girls, when they come in or TCU plays there, you're gonna get every single team's best look. And it was really, really good to see that early.
Yeah, and like you said, the same thing happening on Cincinnati where it was they punched a little bit above their weight and gave TCU a bit of a scare, which that's I think going to be kind of a common theme throughout the season with some of these teams that do not have the same talent as TCU. They're going to look at TCU and go, "We want that ranked win on our schedule." So TCU has to be expecting that. And this is a veteran team. And so I think they'll adjust to that quicker than maybe a younger team or, an inexperienced team. But it's still not easy to go into every game knowing everybody wants to beat you and you have this giant target on your back. So being able to come back basically and hold off Colorado, I think was a really, really good thing for them, especially early on in conference play when you've still got your Kansas States and teams like that lying ahead of you. Leading scorers in this game, Haley Van Lith and Sedona Prince had 14 points each, And Van Lith had six of seven was 6 of 7 from the free throw line, including 4 of 4 in the final minute to kind of seal the game. Sedona added 10 rebounds and 4 steals for her sixth double-double of the season. Most of Sedona's stats came in the second half. She had 8 points in the third quarter, kind of helped spark that TCU run and get that lead. Colorado's leading scorer was Jade Masgayo, the Fort Worth native. 14 points, 6 rebounds, 2 steals. She was one of those ones that fouled out that talked about earlier. And then Sedona and Agnes had 3 blocks apiece. And Agnes added 9 points, 4 rebounds. The blocks are becoming a huge, huge thing for TCU.
Yeah, no, Sedona's comfortably leading the country in blocks. She's averaging more than 3 a game right now, which is really, really good and kind of what you came to expect and what we've talked about with our height advantage. But I want to harp on Agnes for a little bit. Is one, I mean, against Brown, she set her career record in rebounds per game with 14. And then now you're seeing it transition to blocking players. You're seeing her go after offensive rebounds. Like here, we've talked about it, and I'm gonna keep talking about it, is the heart she plays with. It is not a, you know, she's not gonna be an offensive stalwart on this team, especially with the players around her. But she does exactly what you need someone of her to do. Is the not I don't want to say dirty in a sense of taking cheap shots at players, but she's the player that's willing to get dirty and dive on the ground for a ball, go in for the hard fouls, take the charge. Like, she does all the dirty work that is kind of not, I don't want to say expected of the other three, but like, their talent wise, they don't need to do the dirty work necessarily. Agnes seems to love doing the dirty work, and it's so good for the team and being able to still have that scrappy mentality that you saw a lot of last year. Whenever the team was fighting injuries, fighting, you know, having open tryouts, like this team had to scrape and fight their way through. And Agnes was right there, you know, leading the charge. And it's just, it's translating to this year. And she's taken such a big step up for this team that as long as she can continue to play at this level and the other three are playing at what we expect them to, like, she's probably one of the best no-name fourth mans in the country.
That's what I was gonna say is she's the fourth man on this team. You have, depending on the night, it's either Madison or Haley as your number one from the guard position, and then Sedona's obviously taking control at center. And then Agnes just kind of quietly does what she does. Some nights her stats are gonna blow you away. She'll occasionally get a double-double. Most of the time her stats are pretty quiet because she does all those things that don't show up in the stat sheet. And those things are contagious. And it just makes everybody else want to play a little bit harder, you know, look for the better shot, crash the boards, even though that's not necessarily the thing you're best at. Little things like that just make you that much better. So I agree with you. Who Agnes is as a player is just irreplaceable. And I think there's a reason that Mark Campbell continually has called her the backbone of this program, because you have to have a player like that to have any level of high success. So, with the Colorado game, kind of just other little things of note, TCU shot 4-17 from the field to start. So, just a really rough, slow start. They went on that 16-5 run to get the lead at half. There were a lot of turnovers in the first half, 10 each team. It's just a little bit of a messy game. It's one of those things that you can almost expect it when you're coming off a non-conference game. You know, you're just trying to get back into that rhythm of being in conference play. So I think there was a little bit of that as well. But Colorado, like we talked about, gave them the best shot they possibly could. And that's what they're going to get from everybody. And they absolutely got that from Cincinnati. Yesterday was an 81-66 win over Cincinnati for TCU. Madison Connor scored 29 points and dished out 7 assists. Most of her points came on 3-pointers. She was 6 of 9. And a lot of them were really timely and just kind of helped with the momentum. You know, if TCU was just looking a little off on offense, she was able to hit a three, hit one in transition, and just kind of calm the team down a little bit.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Madison had a quieter game against Colorado, I don't want to say quiet, but like kind of what you've seen from her the whole year. We've talked about her ability to kind of take over that you've seen that we've seen in the 2 weeks previous, and I've talked about if can she keep that up? Is that something that she's going to be able to do? And you saw her, I don't want to say take a step back, but kind of go back to what her she has been all season against Colorado and then Cincinnati. It was just like, hey, remember, I'm Madison Connor and I like 3-pointers. So, I mean, there's a legitimate chance that she breaks her own record from last year at this point.
Well, she was at 53 or 52 going into, I think going into this week. And so she's already broken. She's already past 60, and we've still got well over half a conference play to go plus postseason. I don't think that's a wild prediction at all.
I've argued there's a debatable point that she breaks the all-time school record this year, which is a lot. Like, she would need, I believe it was like 153, I believe it was. So I mean, it's not insanely absurd to think about, but yeah, no, like she's, it's just being able to see her still have that takeover mentality, especially in a game as physical as the Cincinnati game was. It's really, really good for one, her confidence and the confidence around the team. Especially to the likes of, a player like HVL, who, not saying that she feels that she has to shoulder the responsibility for the team's success a lot, but at the guard position, every time it's been a big name opponent or a conference game so far, it had been HVL kind of being the takeover player in the guard position. And having Madison be able to continue to take that step up is going to be amazing for letting both of them kind of get their separation, get their time, and get their scoring.
Well, and Mark Campbell talked about that a little bit after the game, particularly with the 7 assists that Madison had. And just he really talked about Madison's growth as a player. Yes, she's a shooter and she's one of the best shooters in college basketball, but she's starting to look to be more of a playmaker and find her teammates and look for those opportunities and be a little bit more of a complete player. And Madison talked about it too after the game is, yeah, I love to shoot and I'm good at it, but if I want to be an elite player at college and try to play at the next level, got to round out a little bit more. And I think you're starting to see that kind of come to life here. And part of why she was able to kind of take control was Haley Van Lith did not have a good game. She really struggled. She had 2 points in the first half on 1 of 3 shooting. She finished, I believe, with 7 points. But she just looked off all game. A couple travels, kind of missing some passes that she normally makes right on point. And it's one of those things that you're not overly concerned because Haley is so experienced and she's smart. She's got high basketball IQ. So you know she's going to kind of come out of whatever this was. So I think it was nice to see that Madison saw, okay, my teammate's not firing on all cylinders. This is my opportunity to lead this team. I liked seeing that someone else stepped up to the plate.
Yeah, it's also, part of what we just talked about, and you just harped on too, is seeing someone else step up to the plate. Is these players are going to have off games. Sedona had an off game against South Carolina. Madison had an off game against Notre Dame. Like, these players are going to have off games. They're not perfect. They're not Caitlin Clark NBA superstars. Like, they're going to have games where they struggle or they just maybe aren't feeling 100%. Like, you don't know what they're going through. That, but that's kind of what we talked about is having the big three in Madison, Connor, HVO, and Sedona is so big because it allows them to kind of maybe one of them is not having their best night. And then you kind of, hey, you know what? Let's share it between these two. That's more than okay. But then you have the times where it's all three of them clicking on all cylinders. Look out. It doesn't matter who you are at that point. Like, it's really, really good. And it kind of just speaks to what Mark Campbell's built in that. There was no point where, like you said, you were kind of wor like you're going to be worried about HVL. It's like, hey, you know what? Madison Connor's taking the step up. I'm okay with it.
Well, and like you said, there's just so many weapons. And of course, Sedona, she started out just a little slow, but she really started getting going there at the end of the first half. And she finished with 21 points on 9 of 12 shooting. So extremely efficient. She didn't really take any outside shots. It was all stuff right around the basket because Cincinnati didn't really have anyone to match up with her super well. She had 6 rebounds and 2 blocks. Agnes Anunoppu, 10 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a block. Again, just doing all those little things to keep TCU on track, those little hustle plays, things like that. Some other notes from this game, TCU had 21 points off of turnovers. Cincinnati had five. So really, really good to see TCU, even when they did turn the ball over, not letting that explode into points or second shot opportunities for Cincinnati. And TCU did a nice job breaking the press that Cincinnati put on. They apply a full court press for most of the game. And I don't know how many points TCU got off of it, but they would quickly get that ball up the court and either get a wide open three or a nice quick dump down inside to whoever was cutting. So it was really nice to see them, just not panicking under that pressure and taking advantage of what the defense gave them.
Yeah, I think full court press kind of you might see implemented a little bit more against TCU even, just because there are, no offense to Cincinnati, but a few teams who are a little bit more talented than them, that can kind of keep up with the fast break pace and play a little bit better defense on there. That I think teams will kind of look at film and maybe see a little bit of all the turnovers and the erraticness and be like, hey, you know what? If you see the HVL's having a bad off game. Like, let's go full court press, kind of see if we can put a little bit of pressure up. So I think it's really good to kind of see them work through it right now. I mean, we're only three games into conference play. Like, we've got a lot, and there's still a lot that you haven't seen with this team, right? Like, you hadn't seen them play a full game since November, Thanksgiving week against Notre Dame. I mean, I can't really call the South Carolina game a full game. Like, Notre Dame was the last real whistle to whistle that you saw the team play. So having these teams give them all these challenges is really, really good right now. Just because there's still two more months, 2.5 more months till Big 12 tournament play even starts. Like, you got a while.
Well, that's something Campbell talked about after the Cincinnati game is they need these types of tests because, like you said, not every game is going to be a 15-point blowout. So they need these things. And yes, they're going to face stiffer competition through as Big 12 play goes on. But just to be able to navigate some of this in this type of setting is really important.
Yeah, also one more thing too, the points given up off turnovers. That's a really, really good stat for the entire season, right? Like, you're gonna give up turnovers. Like, TCU's forced, I have it right here. They forced 264 total turnovers on the season, like just above 16 a game, and have averaged 22 points off of it. And TCU's averaging 11, just a little over 11 turnovers a game, and only allowing 9 points off of it, which is really, really good margins. Like, it's okay to turn the ball over. It's okay to make mistakes as long as you can stop them on the defensive side of the court from making them make you pay. So it's really, really good that that's kind of been a season trend, even though they both gave up the same amount of turnovers against Cincinnati. TCU blew them out of the water in points off of them.
Yeah. And I think that's part two. They like that transition offense. And you saw that kind of in that first quarter because there was no stoppage of play for the first 7.5 minutes. It was one of those things where you're watching and all of a sudden you're like, wait, there's 3 minutes left in this quarter. We haven't stopped. But that's how TC wants to play is that fast pace. Let's get out running, let's go. And so to your point, they're able to take advantage of those opportunities and turn it into points. And just plays into what they want to do. Third quarter is where TC really started to pull away from Cincinnati. They held Cincinnati to 1 of 8 shooting for the first 5 minutes of the third quarter, really buckled down on defense, and that's where you really started to see them break away. They got an 18-point lead at one point off of a pair of runs, a 6-0 run and an 8-0 run. And then fourth quarter, they let up just a little bit. Cincinnati hung around, cut the lead to 7 before Madison hit a very timely three-pointer, got it back up to 10. And TCU kind of just was able to extend it out from there. You don't love seeing that lead come down more than in half, by 11 points. So that's something I think they'll definitely focus on is how do we not lose that focus? How do we not give that up when we're in those situations? So that's something I think that's a good learning point, teaching point from this game for them. But overall, I think it was a nice win. Coming off of the Colorado one as well.
Yeah, I think it's something, it's like a double-edged sword, right? Like, their offense is so fast-paced that they don't change that. You saw it against South, or not South Carolina, against NC State the first time when NC State cut that lead after final ending of the fourth quarter. You've kind of watched it a little bit at Colorado, but not really because of all the players fouling out. Like, when you're running the fast-paced offense and you don't shift, it's okay as long as you're making your shot still. But when you start to miss it, it's always going to come back to bite you a little bit. And you kind of saw it a little bit against Cincinnati. I don't think it's anything they need to change. I don't think they should change. I don't think they will change. But I think it's just something that it's a give and a take, right? Like, when it works, it's a thing of beauty. They're going to increase their lead exponentially. And when it doesn't work, it kind of makes games that shouldn't be close look a lot closer than what they are.
Yeah, and that's the game of basketball. You're gonna have games where you shoot incredible, everything you throw up goes in. And you're gonna have games where stuff that you can make in your sleep rims out every single time. And so it's like you said, you kind of have to take the good with the bad on that. But I'm with you. I don't think TCU needs to change what they're doing. It's just one of those things you have to be aware that a cold shooting stretch can come and be able to kind of adjust your defense and just how you're approaching things. Well, let's so that's what TCU did this past week. Let's take a look ahead. We have two games this week. The first one is at Kansas. It was scheduled for Tuesday, but it has been moved up to Wednesday, January 8 at 2 p.m. because of the winter weather that has hit Kansas and Kansas City area. So not that unless you happen to be in the Kansas area and you're planning to go, not sure that affects people's plans to go, but just know that game is now on Wednesday. So take a little bit look at the Jayhawks. They are 11-3 overall and 1-2 in the Big 12. Their two losses are double-digit losses to Baylor and Iowa State. They got outscored by nearly 20 points on points in the paint for both games. Their opponents were shooting well over 40% in both games. So not really great stats in those losses, but then they go and beat Oklahoma State on Saturday, and they won 75-66, and looks pretty good. They held Oklahoma State to 36% shooting, including 20% from 3-point range, and that stood out to me just because we've talked about how much TCU loves a 3-point shot. Now, is Kansas going to hold them to 20% from three? I don't know how consistent that is for Kansas. It's not, if you look at their overall team stats, that's not something that jumps out as their 3-point defense. But if they can do that, it changes the game for TCU.
Yeah, I actually think it's the opposite. My key to this game is the 3-point ball, just because opponents are shooting a 30% clip against them, but opponents have only attempted 255 3-pointers against them. TCU has shot 442 on the season. Like, they are going to put up their shots in 3-pointers, and TCU's a little bit better, and this is credit to Mark Campbell and, the squad of being able to create their own space. And having a dominant presence of Sedona does help with that a lot. That I think the 3-pointers are going to be a really, really big key to this game. And in fact, I'm looking at Madison Connor to have a really big game in this one. And I just think that it's I'm going to talk about it in every single game because I don't care. But who do you stop? I mean, they don't have the height to stop Sedona, so you can't really go anything there unless you double, but you can't run a zone because Madison Connor is going to just dagger you to death with threes. And if you try to play man up on there, HVL is just going to blow past you. Like, the perimeter offense is just way too good on this team. And Kansas hasn't really been the best defensive team on the perimeter.
Yeah, and they're kind of an inconsistent team. One game they kind of go against Oklahoma State, they come out and just their defense looks great, everything is firing all cylinders. Another game, their first two conference games, things just aren't firing on all cylinders. So it's you have a little bit of that too. Is Kansas has the ability to be really, really good and beat probably anyone in this conference, but you just don't know what team you're gonna face. So that is something to watch. And you mentioned they don't really have the height to compete with Sedona. Their starting forward is Reagan Williams. She's a 6'3 forward who's a freshman, averaging about 7.8 points per game and 5.7 rebounds. Not bad numbers, especially for a freshman in the Big 12. Really good numbers. But Sedona is so experienced, and she's got an extra 4 inches of height. And as we've seen all season, that height, just that little bit, makes a huge difference. And then all her experience going into this too.
Yeah, Kansas State's losing the rebounding battle on the season. They have a negative 2.5 margin. Like, they're not an exceptionally well rebounding team. So yeah, it's just kind of, I mean, heck, you even throw Aaliyah Robertson in there. Like, she's gonna have a really good game on the boards too. But like, there's just not enough to be able to stop even someone like her. It becomes a little bit of a closer battle, but still, like, being able to have her and maybe rotate a little bit of minutes will be interesting to see.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned Aaliyah Roberson. She was in the Colorado game. She had a really nice game against Colorado, played like 9 minutes. She was really efficient with what she did. And I think the farther they get into Big 12 play, TCU will need games like that from her. She's not going to play a ton, probably about a quarter of the game. But if she can get in there, hit a couple of shots, grab a couple of rebounds, and just be a bit of a physical presence and help spread that floor, I think that's going to be really important in some of these games moving forward.
Yeah, it's even something health-wise, right? Like, Sedona's always had consistent health issues, and it's just part of the game and playing as hard as she does that as you get further in the season, you get more and more beat up. Like, being able to throw Aaliyah in there will become really big, especially whenever you're playing, I don't want to say, like, lesser teams as an insult, but, like, it's just genuinely, like, there's a lot of teams that can't compete with the talent level that it's, when you're playing a team like that, it's really, really effective to get them some minutes and experience and give your players some rest.
Yeah. Looking at the other kind of key players for Kansas, we have Samaya Nichols averaging 21.9 points per game on almost 46% shooting and 5 assists per game. She is the second leading scorer in the Big 12. Just for kind of comparison for TCU fans, Haley Van Lith is sixth in the conference at 17.9 points. So there is a little bit of a gap there, but also, like we've talked about, a little bit different talent composition on these teams. Elle Evans is our other big score at 13.5 points per game. I just found this fact interesting. She plays 35 minutes per game, which is third in the Big 12. And we've talked a lot about the minutes that TC players have played, and Haley Van Lith is the highest at 32.9. So it's just kind of interesting to see if maybe fatigue plays a little bit of a factor. I'm not sure if it'll be a huge thing. I just found that kind of interesting. And Elle Evans is kind of their 3-point shooter. She makes about 2 per game. So that is going to be Kansas on Wednesday. So then looking ahead to this weekend, they will play Texas Tech on Saturday in Lubbock. Texas Tech is 12-4 on the season and 1-2 in Big 12 play. Beat Houston and then lost to Arizona State and number 12 Kansas State. Both of those were, one was an 18-point, the other was a 20-point loss. So pretty wide margins there. Then before they play TCU, the Red Raiders will play number 18 West Virginia. Talk about a tough stretch in the Big 12.
And be good, you got to go through fire, right? Like, and that's quite the fire. I mean, you're playing arguably the top three teams in the conference. So, I mean, if there's ever a time to see how good you are, that's then.
Yeah, I mean, to Texas Tech's benefit, they do get some of those at home, so I mean that helps, but it's, you still got to play all those teams and play that talent and get through that. Some notable stats for them. So on the season, they're scoring 68 points and giving up 61. But if you isolate their conference scoring numbers, they're giving up 71 points per game and scoring about 64. So, and if you look at their non-conference schedule, you don't really have any big juggernauts on there. So once they got into Big 12 play, I think for them, it was maybe a step up in competition, and you're starting to see that kind of play out a little bit. They are a really good defensive team, though, from the 3-point range, holding teams to 29%. And like we talked about earlier, not a lot of teams in the Big 12 shoot as many 3-pointers as TCU does. But if they've been holding teams 29% all season, like that's our season average, they've got to be doing something right as far as getting hands and faces and things like that.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me about this game is that they are the only team in the conference who has a player even close to Sedona's height. Like, they have two players, not one, two, that are both 6'7" on their roster, which is Sedona's height. One of them hasn't really gotten too many minutes at all. She's gotten 2 minutes as her season high. And the other one has been averaging a good amount of minutes, but it's really weird because every other big has still been having really big, good games against them. So I don't think it's anything to worry about with Sedona, but I do think it is something that will be worth watching as far as rebounds go. And, kind of, it's the first time she's going to play someone that's as physically impending as her as she has South Carolina.
Oh, and Tech also has Serengue Sanogo, who averages about 2 blocks per game. So I think that's another thing to kind of look at is, she'll be able to get some boards and disrupt some shots too. But again, Sedona has the height advantage there. So like you said, it's not probably something to worry about, but it is something just to look at. Can TCU maintain those advantages on the boards and things like that? Now, talking about rebounding, Texas Tech is the worst overall rebounding team in the Big 12 at just under 34 per game, but they are one of the top teams in offensive rebounds per game at 12 and a half. And I think that's really important because that is how you get extra possessions, those offensive rebounds. And that's why we've talked about Agnes's value, especially on the offensive end, is she will get those offensive boards. If you're going up against a team that the average is 12 and a half per game, that's a lot of opportunities for points. If you let them hit that average.
Yeah, it's a question of, if you were to give up those offensive rebounds per game, right? Like, the good thing is that Texas Tech is giving up a lot of points to their opponents. Like, on the bright side, this could be a shootout. And I mean, I wouldn't hate the idea of a shootout, right? Like, I think we're still kind of really yet to seeing them get in one where it's both teams are just, hey, it's both our days. Let's just see who makes the first mistake. So I think there's a real possibility that this isn't a shootout because both teams are really, really good. It's just Texas Tech is really, really good at one thing, and lucky for them, it's one of the most important things in basketball is offensive rebounds.
Looking at some other stats for them, they're plus 2.5 in turnover margin. They get a 10.5 steals per game, so they are going to put some defensive pressure on you. Have to be able to handle that. Again, we've seen TCU do a pretty good job with that. They're getting about 5.8 block shots per game. Like we talked about earlier, they'll be able to kind of battle with TCU on that area. Their leading scorer is Jasmine Shavers at 15.5 points per game and 2 assists. Bailey Maupin puts up about 13.7 points on 43% shooting. And then Sanogo, 5.6 points per game and those 2 blocks a game. So those are kind of the big names from Texas Tech. And looking a little bit at that Kansas State game where they lost 77-57, Sanogo had 3 blocks. So even against a top 15 team, she's going to get her blocks. She's going to get her work done. Kansas shot 14% from three against Kansas State. So if you can get them into rush shots, just kind of uncomfortable, and you can hit your threes, you can blow this thing wide open.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, right? Like we talked about it before we recorded, is you don't know who's good and really who's not. And there's a lot of teams in the middle of the pack that haven't shown any consistency. And Tech is one of them. Like, they're gonna grind you to death basically on defense. Like, you're gonna have to earn your possessions and earn your shots. But they also can't put up points themselves. Like, it's just not really their kind of deal is. I mean, 57 points against Kansas State, like it's less than ideal, but it's going to be a really, really good game of watching TCU's offense against Tech's defense. So, and I think, as long as you don't even have to, obviously, we want you to win the offensive rebounding battle, but as long as you can limit the damage on there, then this should be a very controllable and easy game for TCU.
And one other thing of note, kind of the point we talked about earlier with the 3-point range, they did hold Kansas State to 20% from three. So that is absolutely something to watch in that game on Saturday. And that game will tip off at 6 p.m. It'll be on ESPN Plus, as will the, well, imagine the Kansas game will, yes, the Kansas game will still be on ESPN Plus as well. on Wednesday. So catch both of those there or on the radio 88.7 KTCU, excuse me. So that's what's ahead for TCU is at Kansas and at Texas Tech. So now we're going to take a look at Big 12 standings and kind of what's coming up for the conference overall as a whole. Like we talked about, Kansas State is ranked number 12. West Virginia is number 18. So with TCU, you've got three teams ranked in the top 20. Utah is in the receiving votes category with 24 votes. Oklahoma State had 7 votes and Baylor had 5. Those numbers are probably going to change on Monday, tomorrow at the time of recording. But that's kind of where the conference is sitting. They've got basically six teams that are getting looked at nationally, which I for top 25, which I think is good, given that they don't outside of Kansas State going into the season, you didn't know exactly who was going to be kind of dominant teams in the Big 12.
Yeah, I mean, every single week that game against Kansas State gets bigger and bigger, right? You only get one shot at each other prior to potentially meeting up in the Big 12 tournament. Like, there's a legitimate chance this could be a top 10 matchup by the time they meet.
Yeah, it'll kind of depend on what happens ahead of them, but definitely top 15 and it's potential for one of them to be number 10. You would think it'd be TCU because they're in 11 right now, but there's that potential for someone to be up there. I was looking at some notable games that TCU fans might want to just take note of. So on January 8th, Kansas State is going to play at Utah. So I think that'll reveal a lot. It'll tell us kind of where Utah's at. Are they as good as kind of people think with them receiving so many votes? It'll tell us a little bit more about Kansas State. Are they super dominant or are they just really good? And then January 11, you have West Virginia at Oklahoma State. And I picked this one for two reasons. One, West Virginia is one of those ranked teams. And two, TCU plays Oklahoma State on January 22nd. So I think this is a really good one to kind of keep track tabs on. And just see, okay, what's Oklahoma State? What can they do against a top 20 team?
Yeah, I mean, prior to the Kansas loss, I would have told you Oklahoma State was probably a arguably a top three team in the conference with their scoring ability. But now you just, like I said, there's no consistency. You're kind of unsure of where outside of Kansas State that line begins to fall of who's able to at least make a really, really capable deep run come Kansas City in March. Yeah, I think it's a really one, it's a good game for West Virginia because I still don't know if they're good, Tori.
It's a good question. If you pull up their schedule, so they are 12-2 overall. So their losses are at Colorado, 65-60, and versus Texas on a neutral court, 78-73. So
And that game is also like 75-74 with like 18 seconds left.
right. And so not a bad loss by any stretch. Texas is ranked, I believe they're in the top 10
They're
still.
five.
Yeah, so they're to lose by 5 points, realistically a little bit less than that, to the number five team in the nation, that's not a bad loss. Colorado, that's a tougher one. Also the conference opener, road game. So I mean I can see how you could lose that. And then they, handle UCF 80-58, and then they beat
Just don't.
BYU
Yeah, they just haven't passed the
66-53.
eye test for me, really. Like, it's like they looked really good against Texas, but then they haven't looked anywhere close to that level since.
Yeah, because they blew out East Tennessee State, blew out Temple, and then you've done what you should against UCF and BYU. West Virginia, they're a team that they're so good on defense that they're gonna keep themselves in games, which is why it's hard to judge them because they're gonna stay in games, whether or not they are as good or as talented as the team they're going against. And so I'm with you. I think West Virginia is the hardest one to kind of evaluate. And now I would put Oklahoma State in that category as well, just because they lost Kansas and we had thought, oh, they're clearly going to be one of the top three. And they very well still could be. Every team has a game where just things don't click. So I'll be curious to see what Oklahoma State does here, especially with TCU having them on their schedule in a week or so.
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna get something's got to give. It's either Oklahoma State's offense or West Virginia's defense. So there's a chance that you look at this and it's a complete blowout one side or another, maybe.
Yeah, it's really hard to predict right now because I think we just don't have enough
Yeah.
Big 12 data points for some of these teams. But if we take just kind of a look at where some of these teams are record-wise within the Big 12, so Utah is undefeated as well in conference. They've beaten Arizona State, Arizona, and Iowa State. So kind of taking care of their business. Kansas State and TCU are 3-0 as well. And then you have whole host, Oklahoma State, West Virginia, Baylor, Arizona, and Arizona State all at 2-1. And then Kansas, Texas Tech, Colorado, Cincinnati, Iowa State at 1-2. BYU, UCF, and Houston at 0-3. I don't think that bottom half is overall that surprising. UCF, Houston, they were the bottom of the pack last year. BYU, I'm a little surprised they're 0-3. They weren't great last year in the Big 12, but they were okay. So I'll be kind of curious to see if they can maybe correct things a little bit. But I think the bottom half of the standings is about what we thought they would be. It's that top half where I think we're going to see a lot of movement.
Yeah, and then I mean, we talked about it a little bit before, but like women's basketball is a peculiar sport, right? Like it's a very, very top heavy sport where after that it's kind of pure chaos. So it's really, really fun to, as of right now, not be part of that chaos and kind of just be able to watch it unfold a little bit.
So yeah, it'd be interesting to watch how all this plays out as the season goes. We'll of course be keeping tabs on that. Every podcast, just a like I said, it's interesting to see how it all plays out, and then two, to see how that affects TCU as they're moving forward. Anything else you want to touch on this week, JD, as we head into another week of Big 12 play?
No, I mean, we talked about the realistic possibility TC finishes the first half of conference play undefeated before they really get into the meat and potatoes of it. And I mean, we're trending that way with two games this week. So, as long as everyone stays healthy and they keep doing what they're doing, then plans should be coming along nicely.
Yeah, you have Kansas and Texas Tech this week, and then you get that rematch with UCF and then Utah on the 17th. And I think that one is one that's starting to get circled with Utah starting off undefeated in conference. So yeah, they're getting close to that meat and potato stretch. But I think they get a nice little introduction to conference play here and are able to work out a few kinks.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we have for this week. Thank you everyone so much for joining us. For JD Andrus, I'm Tori Couch. You're listening to Splash Pad, a TCU on SI podcast. Until next time, have a great rest of your day.
Yes.